This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome to the broadcast on this Sunday, March 9th, 2025. Hope everybody enjoying the warmer temperatures again today. Lots of fishing chatter on this week's broadcast. We're going to head to the border, Rainy Lake, Rainy River, that country, and chat with Chris Granrud in about 15 minutes. He's got a guide service up there. We will talk about how there's a ton of ice still in that region, still an open walleye season, and maybe get a forecast for what to expect on the Rainy River here in a few weeks as that starts to open up with Chris. At bottom of the hour, going to talk to a grad student named Griffin Blegan, a fun young man who is studying bowfin, also known as the dogfish. A lot of us avid anglers have probably caught a dogfish at some point in our lives, not a species we typically pursue or associate with fisheries research, but Griffin is diving into understanding that species up at Bemidji State, so looking forward to talking with him a little bit. We're going to talk with Eric Meyer here in just a moment about the Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic, which is next weekend, but one other quick fishing note before I do that. I mentioned last week Lake Mille Lacs, a lot going on with perch up there. There's been a phenomenal perch bite on the big lake. Photos of jumbo perch coming through my email. And it sounds like we have actually surpassed the safe allowable harvest, the quota for perch on that lake. The DNR has that safe allowable harvest in tandem with the bands up there. And the agency talking about maybe altering the perch regulation for the rest of the season so that we don't continue to go over that quota too much. Now, it's not a huge issue once open water gets rolling because there aren't a lot of people that go to Mille Lacs and target perch via hook and line in open water. But probably still some more will be taken this ice fishing season. So far, I'm unaware of any specific change, but as soon as I get that dialed in, I will let listeners to this broadcast know more about it. Now, like I say, a lot of fishing talk, but let's transition into a hunting topic here real quick. I'd like to devote the remainder of this segment to chatting with Eric Meyer. He's the show promoter with the Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic. It's going to be held this coming weekend, March 14th, 15th, and 16th down at Canterbury Park. Eric, good to see you. And gosh, how many years you've been at it now with this event? You know, off the top of your head?
Yeah, nice to see you too. 2016 was the first year we did it, and it was back at the State Fairgrounds in the Coliseum building.
Eric, I see you have more than 160 exhibitors. That's a lot to pack into that Canterbury facility, isn't it?
We have every little nook and cranny in that Canterbury sold. Probably 10 more booths than I had last year.
Good.
And really quality exhibitors.
I see you got some of the old war horses back, as well as some new folks among the seminar speakers. Melissa Bachman has been just a mainstay at your show, and she's been great. I always like going down there with my daughter, and she loves getting her picture taken with Melissa. She's so great with the kids. I see you also got Dan Schmidt this year from Deer and Deer Hunting, old crony of mine way back. I've known Dan for years.
Yeah, Dan's great. He has a TV show he hosts and his radio show, and he's also the editor-in-chief for Deer and Deer Hunting magazine. He just is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to anything that has to do with deer and deer hunting. we brought him in for all 3 days.
The heart and soul of the show, though, however, is Minnesotans, right, who bring their racks in, who bring the antlers in to get measured. Not just whitetail antlers, right? There's other things that get measured there, too, bear skulls and elk antlers. Tell us about that process.
We have about 25 of the Minnesota official measurers that come in and do the scoring, and we have a package price when you buy an admission ticket. One antler measure is included in that ticket price of $15, and then you check it in and they score it, and then we bring it out to the wall and display it. Any Minnesota deer, elk, moose, shed antlers, and bear skulls are included in this, and it's just Minnesota animals, and it's all fair chase.
And even though it's just Minnesota, you'll still have hundreds, right? Antlers and other skulls, that sort of thing, to get measured, right? Your promo says more than 200 on display?
Yeah, last year it was well over 260 that came in for scoring. And this year, during the 2024 season, it was something else. A lot of monster bucks, you know, a number of them over 200 inches, their score. So we have some pretty unique racks, too, that are coming in. A few double drop time bucks, and yeah, it's going to be awesome.
We're chatting with Eric Meyer. He is the show promoter for the Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic. That event runs next weekend, March 14th, 15th, and 16th at Canterbury Park down in Shakopee. Eric, a couple points I'd like to make here. One, free parking. It's easy on, easy off Highway 169 and free parking for customers.
Yeah, I heard there's somewhere around 2,000 parking spots there, and it's free.
You got some great show sponsors, Eric. You got Whitetail Properties. You got the Turkey Federation. You got Outdoor News. I got to point that out. And Chevy is your presenting sponsor, huh?
Yeah, the Select Heartland Chevy dealers. There's about 58 dealers in mostly Minnesota, and then a few are into Wisconsin on the west side here. And we really appreciate their support. They help bring in some of these bigger names to the show, and adds a lot of credibility as well.
Appreciate their support at Outdoor News also. They're a big, important advertiser with Outdoor News and OutdoorNews.com. The show kicks off this Friday, March 14th at 1 o'clock, goes till 8 p.m., then Saturday 9 to 7 and Sunday 9 to 4. Free parking down at Canterbury Park. It's a great event, Eric. I mean, you really do work hard on it. There's a lot of bells and whistles as folks are walking around this show that jump out at me compared to some of the other sports shows that I go to. Activities for kids, we should mention that too.
Yeah, we have a number of activities that they can take part in the Kids Zone, sponsored by the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. The group from A1 Archery out of Hudson, Wisconsin, that run the kids' archery shoot, and they have trained members in there helping these kids shoot a bow for the first time. And then the Fishing for Life people come in with the trout pond, and they have an archery shoot with the Nerf balls on the air. It's called a safe archery shoot. Trail Life USA, they run the rubber band shoot, and then the Minnesota Falconers come in with hawks and falcons.
Cool. Wild Trails Kids Zone. Check that out. Eric, any closing thoughts before we go?
Come on down. We have great deals for the family on Sunday. If you come down, it's $8 for an adult. If you bring a kid 15 or younger, and kids 15 and younger are free.
Well, good luck with the event, Eric. The website is mndeerclassic.com. Very easy website to remember, mndeerclassic.com. I'll see you down there, Eric. Good luck with the 2025 Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic.
Thank you.
That's our friend Eric Meyer. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830 on this Sunday, March 9th. Welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. Last week I mentioned that March 3rd was the deadline to remove permanent fish houses, overnight fish houses, from lakes in the southern two-thirds of the state by last Monday, March 3rd. The northern third of the state, you got to get that done by St. Patrick's Day, a week from tomorrow, Monday, March 17th. And with the recent resurgence of winter, I think some folks might need to pay attention to that again. I think we all got a little re-inspired for winter activities this past week. Speaking of northern Minnesota, I want to check in now with an old friend of mine I've known many years. His name is Chris Granrud from Rainy Days Guide Service up on Rainy Lake. It's a little different animal up there. It's a little colder. Definitely thicker ice than I believe we've got down in southern Minnesota. And Chris is going to talk to us about that now. Chris, good to see you, my friend. How you doing?
Good to see you, Rob. Yeah, you guys got dumped on snow here, I understand, but we missed that one.
Yeah, and, you know, until we got that snow, I mean, it was changing into spring pretty fast down here. I mean, we were losing ice, talking about some of the accesses getting marginal. I think this cold and snow probably helped a lot, you know, around the edges of the lake. So I think it gave us a bit of an extension. But even prior to this weather front, that has not been a problem up there. You were telling me you were out on Rainy Lake, what, this past week, and what, 40 inches of ice?
Yeah, 40 inches of ice. I mean, it's a lot of ice, and it's good ice, too. I mean, it's a little bit of snowpack, you know, still on top of that ice there. But, yeah, we've got a long ways to go, and kind of looking at our forecast ahead here. I mean, they're not showing real high temperatures. So, yeah, we've got a lot of good ice fishing ahead of us yet. Kind of my favorite time of year, really.
And you were telling me that this is some of the thickest ice you've seen in a number of years.
Yeah, you know, we've had a good winter. We had good ice formation, but we didn't have a lot of snow, and we melted a little bit of that snow off top, and then it got cold again. So we formed a lot of good ice kind of late in the season there. So yeah, we're in real good shape there. A lot of great ice fishing. The landings are in good shape yet. Of course, when you get into March, you know, that's always something we want to kind of keep in mind, the landings themselves. But that main sheet of ice pretty thick out there right now.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I've been saying even down here is that when the accesses might get marginal, if you can get out there, there's a big piece of ice in all of our lakes across the state. You said March is one of your favorite times to ice fish. How come, Chris?
First of all, the weather is usually pretty nice. You know, I like to have some mobility. There's something about being able to sit on the ice there with, you know, a sweatshirt and sit on top of your sled and catch fish. Those fish get pretty active that time of year, too. And then, you know, what's funny is that, you know, we always hear, Rob, you know, early in the year, everybody's so anxious to get on the ice. You know, like, well, can we get on the ice by Thanksgiving? Or they're always pushing the envelope early in the season. But this is a long ice fishing season up here. You know, I mean, as you know, we take a little bit of break midwinter and go south. But I mean, here we are in March and we've got 40 inches of ice. So when a lot of people are putting their stuff away and they're getting their boats out, I mean, we've got the most ice we've ever had right now. So, I mean, we've got a lot of good ice fishing ahead of us. And then sometimes not the crowds either. So people are transitioning. Best right. of both worlds some ways.
And, you know, long days, that's something I like to point out to folks. I mean, you can get out early and have a long day to enjoy fishing and really kind of get your money's worth. You're not going up there for 6 hours of light. The walleye season remains open up there on the border, right? That's important for folks down here. We've had the walleye season closed for a couple of weeks already here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the last day of our walleye season in border water is April 14th. So yeah, we've got a lot of walleye fishing ahead of us yet. Of course, you know, I spend a lot of time this time of year chasing big crappies. But yeah, big crappies, you know, pike fishing can be good, walleye fishing. So a lot of good fishing opportunities ahead of us. Yeah, it's a great time, you know, especially with some shortened seasons of ice fishing recently. You know, get your money's worth this year. You know, it's not that long of a drive if you're from the Twin Cities to get up along the border and fish some of that water there. But don't think that because you've got 50 degrees coming down the city that this is done. I mean, there's a lot of ice fishing ahead of us here.
You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. I'm Rob Dreisline, and we're chatting with Chris Granrud from Rainy Days Guide Service. His website is Rainy Days, D-A-Z-E, rainydaysoutdoors.com. So, Chris, we've been talking about ice fishing, and I presume it's been a pretty good ice fishing. You're a pretty good bite up there. It's always good up there. You got so many systems coming in, so many year classes. There's always walleyes in the system up there, and there's less pressure than we see down here. But then what happens is you get some ice melting, and you get some water flowing down the Rainy River, and that's an incredible spring phenomenon up there. Tell us a little bit what that's all about.
I mean, honestly, it seemed like it's always the kickoff for open water season in the state of Minnesota, it seems like. But yeah, with the Rainy River, I mean, you know, it's just an awesome opportunity to catch a trophy caliber fish. You know, I mean, it's a catch and release bite. And, you know, we always tell people to come up and fish this bite. That's kind of why you're here, is an opportunity to get a big fish. That big, fast, cold, moving water, fish release real well. But that's really what people are chasing. You know, those fish will come up into the Rainy River, usually kind of in that end of March time frame, and they'll start working up in there to spawn. And you just have a really good opportunity to connect with a real big fish that time of year. It's volatile. There's 100 ways that river can change, you know, with different little feeder creeks coming in there and dirtying that water, or the water being too cold. There's just a lot of different things. Flow can change. But what people want to keep in mind is that even though I might be on the ice and have 30, 40 inches of ice out there, there'll be a point where that river cracks, you know, just based on the flow, you know. So when that dam opens up and they start letting more flow through the dam, that erodes that ice. So many years, we may actually be ice fishing and be on the river at the same time. So those are just two entirely different fishing opportunities.
So to make this clear for folks who are kind of trying to see it in their head, so Rainy Lake is upstream. That's this big chunk of ice that Chris was just talking about. And then you get below International Falls, you've got the Rainy River that's heading down into Lake of the Woods. And you talked about those walleyes moving up. They're coming up from Lake of the Woods?
Yeah, so there's actually some native, you know, Rainy River fish, if you will. Sure. But the push is from Lake of the Woods. So a lot of those big walleyes are going to move into that system to spawn there. So, you know, every year is a little bit different. See, it can be the best walleye fishing you've ever had in your life, and it can be totally off too. So, I mean, it all depends on the conditions, and sometimes it's a timing thing. But if you get those conditions right, it can be absolutely phenomenal fishing.
And Chris, what are folks typically using there? Is it a jig and a minnow bite? I know the Emerald Shiner thing is a really important live bait forage on the Rainy River. What are most folks doing to catch those big walleyes up there?
Old school fishing would be to grab a dead shiner and a jig and float up the river, float down it in this vertical jig, and that's going to produce fish. And then years ago, people started throwing plastics, just kind of artificial plastics. Jigs and plastics tend to be a really great way to catch those fish. You can
just bouncing them on the bottom.
Yep, you could sit on spot lock or anchored, if you will, and kind of cast it and kind of retrieve that back. You'll see people actually trolling crankbaits now. That's in the last couple of years, you see more and more people doing that as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of different techniques, but if you get the right conditions, a lot of them are going to work. The fun thing there is if that bite is on, you've got a real chance at getting, you know, a 28 to, you know, 30 plus inch walleye that's there. So shallow water, usually they're pretty aggressive. And it's fun when you come out of the ice fishing season, you know, and you've been trying to convince these walleyes to bite, and all of a sudden you get into a river bite, and that thing is just angry. I mean, it just like almost rips the rod out of your hand angry. So this is such a great kickoff.
Chris, you had some fairly severe spring flooding that occurred up there 3 years ago in 2022, I believe. Are the conditions set up that you worry about that in 2025?
Yeah, that was a bad flood we had there. We had a lot of, you know, we had a ton of snow in the woods, and then we end up just getting piled with a lot of rain. This year we don't have a lot of snow in the woods, so that's going to probably change the runoff here. But you know, things can change quite a bit. But at this point, we think we're probably going to be okay. And yeah, we don't need any of that. Rainy River's a reservoir, right? So I mean, people don't necessarily understand that, but with the dam there, I mean, it's technically a reservoir. It was original lake, original footprint, but then it's been dammed up to expand, and there's only one outlet, right? So I mean, you've got all sorts of inlets on the north side and east side of Rainy Lake of letting water in. There's only one way out, and that's the dam in International Falls. And when we had that flood, we had all the gates open at the dam, and it was going over top of the dam. And I would go out on a guide trip in the morning, and I'd come back, and at my dock, I was raised 4 inches a day.
Wow.
Just hard to comprehend, 227,000 acres of water, raising 4 inches a day with all the dams and going over top of the dam. So that was bad. We don't need that again.
As we speak, we're getting into the week of, March 9th and 10th here. Everything's really locked up right now, but it can change quickly. If you were a betting man, do you think the rainy will be getting going by St. Patrick's Day, or you think it's going to be deeper into March than that?
Yeah, I think it'll be deeper. I guess what we normally do is we start, like when we pre-book trips, we usually start around the April 4th, April 5th time for pre-book trips. Just we feel a little more comfortable that we're going to be able to get out, and the landings will be open. And obviously, not only do you need flow in the river, but you need the landings, you know, cracked open there. And sometimes that takes the county coming in there with backhoes and driving that thing open there. But I would say we're probably looking at the, you know, end of March time period from what I'm seeing right now. And I'm not very good at predicting the weather, but based on what we've got for ice conditions right now, that's kind of what I'm guessing. It'd be a little more of a safe bet. If I were listening to this and I was like planning on coming up to the Rainy River and taking days off work or whatever, I would probably say April 5th on, you know, that last part of the season, basically what I'm seeing so far.
And Chris, you've had years where it gets going in mid-March, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case in 2025.
Yeah, that is correct. We've had years where we haven't had this much ice, you know, and then obviously got some real good, you know, weather in March. But right now, I'm looking ahead and it's showing like, low 40s. But, you know, again, you get low 40s for a couple hours in the day and you cool back down below freezing again at night. That's not doing a lot, you know, it's not creating that flow that we need there, but it's going to be later.
Chris, before we let you go, sturgeon on the Rainy River, very popular pastime. I presume you've had a lot of fun with that, too. If folks want to get a photo of fish with a sturgeon, if they want that experience, there's probably no better place to do it than the Rainy River in the month of April.
Yeah, for sure. So we start running some guide trips for that after the walleye season closes on April 14th. So typically we'll start running about maybe like that April 20th time frame, and then goes into the, you know, whatever, the first part of May there. But yeah, fantastic opportunity to catch just an absolute giant sturgeon. And, you know, for the most part, obviously, we're just catching and releasing those fish there. But if people haven't did it before, I mean, they're just silly strong fish.
Yeah, it's a ride. It's a lot of fun. Chris, thanks a lot for spending a segment with me. It's good to see you again. I want to encourage folks, if they've never done this before and they want to find a guide to give it a shot before going out on their own, they should check out Rainy Days Guide Service, rainydaysoutdoors.com. Thanks for spending a segment with me, old friend.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Chris Granner from Rainy Days Guide Service, rainydaysoutdoors.com. Let's break. We're going to have more of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, March 9th. I'm Rob Dreisline. Quick little news item I will point out before we get to my next guest. DNR issued a press release noting that the state's moose population remains what they call relatively stable. Their winter survey produced an approximate estimate of 4,040 animals, up a little bit from last year's estimate of 3,700 animals. There's a fair amount of uncertainty in the moose population estimate. They're up there flying around in airplanes, basically looking down to see moose. And they've been doing it for many years. So there's some confidence in it, but there's still a lot of uncertainty. They know overall the moose population in the Northeast is down significantly from 20 years ago when it was about 8,000, but it seems to have stabilized over the past 5 to 10 years. So that's some good news for those of us who like to go in Northeast Minnesota, go into the Boundary Waters, places like that, and have a crack at seeing a moose. Like I say, I wish I had more time to talk moose. I'll maybe devote a segment to that another time, and especially my continued concerns that we don't understand what happened to moose in Northwestern Minnesota. But for now, I want to jump back to my next interview. We're going to swing back to fishing, that theme. We're wrapping up the hard water season, but I want to talk about a fish species that I associate much more with open water. I don't know if I've ever seen one caught through the ice. We're talking about the bowfin, also known as the dogfish. I'm really excited to chat with a young man here, a grad student from Bemidji State. His name is Griffin Blegan, and he is working on a project studying bowfin. Griffin, thanks so much for joining us. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me, Rob.
Where are you from originally, Griffin? You a Minnesota guy?
Yeah, I'm from Brainerd.
Okay. All right. So you know a lot about fishing. Yeah. That's the heart of walleye country, bass country here in Minnesota. Yeah. Why bowfin? Why did you decide that the world needed some dogfish studies?
This isn't my idea. This came from Shannon Fisher, and Shannon's good friends with my advisor at Bemidji State.
Okay, Shannon was just on the show here last week, so interesting timing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this came from him, came to Bemidji State, and then I was talking with my advisor because I was an undergrad there as well.
Who's your advisor?
Andy Hafes.
Okay, gotcha. All right, I know a couple of folks up there, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No issue. So I came in during the summer just to talk to Andy, and he just offhandedly was like, hey, you know, we have this project, we have this funding for it, you know, would you be interested in? I said yes, and here we are. So,
what was your undergrad in, Griffin?
I double majored in aquatic bio and wildlife bio.
Okay, good. So you're probably heading to be one of our future DNR leaders, I'm guessing. I'll let you go to grad school before we put too much of that pressure on you. But nonetheless, bowfin, dogfish, a lot of avid anglers have probably encountered these before. They've maybe caught them and been almost shocked. They're kind of a unique looking fish. They look kind of prehistoric, don't they?
Oh yeah, yep, 100%.
They don't have a real good reputation for their culinary attributes, do they?
No, I think this summer I'm really going to try and do something with one. But
you owe it to the species, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. From what I've heard, the majority of them get eaten down south, like Louisiana area.
Okay.
They basically just get made into like fish cakes or fish patties. Mm-hmm. Their meat is just kind of mushy, but I haven't heard great things, but the people down south tend to eat them fairly often, so there has to be something to it, I guess.
They have a reputation being very bony, I think.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that jibes with the fish cake theory. They just kind of grind that all up.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to give it a hard pass myself. But tell us why bowfin are actually an important species out there. They're a native fish, right?
Yes. Yep. So what we're finding is bowfin are a huge proponent in the checks and balances of panfish, mainly populations, especially bluegills. So in the one lake that we studied thus far last summer, they ate a ton of bluegills. And now these aren't 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 inch bluegills. It's your 2 to maybe 4 inch bluegills. So with them eating those fish in particular, it kind of not in every system, but in a healthy, balanced fishery, it takes away that possibility of a stunted bluegill population. So that's kind of a major thing that they do for systems, is they're just a top level predator.
I think anybody who has fished almost any lake, and especially the southern two-thirds of the state, has encountered a lot of little bluegills.
Yes.
And if there's a species out there that can help knock some of them off and increase the overall size structure of our panfish and lakes, I will happily applaud the species and release them after I catch them. Is there no limit on bowfin right now? I mean, like we say, not that people are keeping them, but the point is they're really not very well regarded. They're regarded as a rough fish. That's why there's not a limit on them, right?
Yep. No limit as of right now.
Your research suggested that they're not particularly abundant. You did what the lake was, Little Toad Lake?
Yep.
What county is that in?
Becker, right?
Becker County.
Like 10 miles east of Detroit Lakes.
Like most top-tier predators, right, whether it's wolves or grizzly bears or muskies, not a real abundant species. Speak to that a little bit.
So we were actually surprised at the number that we found. I mean, it makes sense now that we, you know, have done some research on them. But, you know, you hear reports from people, mainly the people that don't like them. There's so many of them. They're eating all of our fish, you know, panfish numbers are dropping, blah, 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 all that.
Right.
And we found, just in Little Toad anyways, one fish per hectare of surface area throughout the whole lake. So not that they're comparable to a muskie, but they're larger predator with a low abundance that we found so far.
You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. I'm Rob Dreisline. We are chatting with Griffin Blegan. He is a grad student, second-year grad student up at Bemidji State University. He's working on a fisheries project as part of his master's program, looking at bowfin, also known as dogfish. One thing jumped out. We had an article about this recently in Outdoor News. One point that jumped out is not only did you find, I guess, a lot of small bluegills in their bellies, but also a fair number of dragonfly larvae. That surprised you?
Yeah, the amount that they consumed, I think it was over 60% of the things that we were able to physically count were dragonfly larvae. We knew, I think most people know, bowfin are a generalist. They kind of eat whatever's right in front of their face. So the amount of dragonfly larvae could have been an artifact from maybe the spring. You know, all those dragonflies are maybe getting ready to turn into adults, and there's more in the shallow waters and they're coming out. Or they just really love them. I honestly have no idea why we saw that many, but that was really surprising.
Well, they're big, and there's got to be a lot of protein in a dragonfly, a lot of protein bang for the buck.
Yeah.
So how long is your research going to go on? It sounds like you're expanding into some other lakes this year. Tell us about that.
Yep. So we have our second and final field season starting probably this May. We haven't settled on our lakes fully yet, but there's going to be one kind of in the Brainerd, Aiken area, and then there's going to be one down towards the Twin City.
Is there much other bowfin studies out there that you were able to reference, or are you know, one of the first people to really dive into bowfin research?
If you compare it to walleye studies, there's practically nothing for bowfin, but there's a fair amount. A lot of the studies are done down south, kind of in the Carolinas and Louisiana, that kind of area of the country. And there's been a few in Minnesota, and then a few kind of just in Michigan, the other Great Lakes regions, but overall not a ton.
Are you less likely to encounter them through the ice? Are they a warm water fish? Are they a little less active in the winter, or a lot less active?
Yeah. So from what I've heard of, I think for sure one person caught one in Bemidji last winter, but I know a lot of people, or I guess the majority of the time when you see them in the winter, they come through the spear holes of people pike spearing. And they actually have been known to come grab a gulp of air from the spear hole and then keep on swimming. But yeah, during the winter, they really slow down.
They're a warm water species, I guess, sort of like bass. Are we kind of in the northern edge of their range?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Bemidji area is about far north as they get. There is a non-native population, pretty much non-existent, in Lake of the Woods, actually, in the Rainy River, too.
Interesting. So by non-native, you mean someone actually dumped some bowfin in there and a population got established?
Yeah, I think I saw something. I don't know if they was like a justified reason, but it was sometime in the 80s, I think. They just are there now.
The DNR didn't do that, I hope.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
I think it was just someone took it upon themselves for some reason.
Okay. Which is always a bad idea. I'd like to remind listeners of that. Please don't spread fish species around, even if they are native to the state. They're not native to all waters. Speaking of native versus non-native, it kind of struck me anytime I see a story about these snakeheads out east, they look a little bit like a bowfin, don't they?
Yeah. Yep. And I think more out east and down south where their ranges overlap, because we don't have any snakehead here in Minnesota, but that's kind of another way that bowfin can get a bad rap, at least in those areas, is people know, you know, snakeheads are invasive, those things are bad. Well, if someone not as experienced in fish ID or just not familiar catches a bowfin, oh, well, it's a snakehead. That thing's bad. Let's kill it.
The coloration is significantly different, isn't it?
Yeah, I think snakehead, they don't turn like that greenish color like they do here, at least the males do anyways. And they're, I think, tend to be a little darker, a little more mottly.
They're an Asian fish, aren't they?
Yep.
But they do look a lot like bowfin. You should not encounter a snakehead in Minnesota. So if you catch a bowfin, don't think, oh, it's a snakehead, I must kill it. Would you encourage folks, you know, unless they intend to eat it, to release bowfin because they actually serve a purpose out there?
Yeah, I would. It just doesn't make any sense to me that a native fish that is just going about its business would be killed for no reason, unless obviously you're going to use it for something.
And they're not out there eating all the walleyes, you promise?
I promise. We didn't see a single walleye in any of our bowfin stomachs this year.
Like, yeah, all right. Good stuff. If folks want to follow your research or learn more about bowfin, any direction, any place you'd point them, Griffin?
Probably most active on Instagram, and I guess I don't do a ton of research-based posts.
Well, maybe you should.
I think I'm probably going to, starting this field season, I'll probably post a little bit more on there.
Okay.
So, and it's also my photography account too. I do underwater and wildlife photography. So
cool. You go down with scuba gear?
Just snorkel.
Good enough. Yeah. You can do a lot with a snorkel and an underwater camera. Good. I'm going to have to check out that Instagram account myself, Griffin. It's been fun chatting with you, young man. Good to see some young people getting into outdoors research. And I suspect we'll see you down the road. Maybe you'll have a full-time job one of these days. I'll be interviewing you with one of these agencies. I presume that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going into whatever job interests me. I want to have fun doing, you know, my career. So I'm pretty much open to anything.
Good. All right. Well, we'll get the word out for you.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thanks for spending a second with us. Good luck up there at Bemidji State. Say hi to the staff up there. Like I say, I know some of those guys, and enjoy the rest of the winter. And I presume as soon as the ice is out, you're going to be diving and looking for bowfin.
Yep. That's kind of the plan.
Well, good luck this open water season.
Perfect. Thank you, Rob.
That was Griffin Bleggen, grad student up at Bemidji State University. He's knocking out some bowfin dogfish research. Had fun chatting with him about that a little bit. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back. Final segment of this week's broadcast on Sunday, March 9th. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to my guests who joined us. Last week, I spoke a little bit about some of my concerns regarding Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency and some of the issues that could be creating. I specifically cited national parks, my concerns about protecting the resource in our national parks, as well as, you know, providing the public with a decent experience, right? At least making sure we pick up the garbage, those sorts of things. There's a new issue in this discussion. A really good writer in Michigan brought to light. His name is Russ Mason. Other folks have written about it, too. In fact, we had a commentary about it in this week's print edition of Outdoor News. But it involves the lamprey management program here in this country in the Great Lakes. Now, for those of you who don't know what the sea lamprey is, it's an invasive species, one of our worst and an original invasive species. It came through the Great Lakes when they opened up the St. Lawrence Seaway. It's a parasitic animal, fish, that latches on to larger fish and basically sucks the blood out of them, the life out of them, and they die. So it's a bad thing if you're a big lake trout in Lake Superior. It's a bad thing if you're a coho salmon or a Chinook salmon, all these really cool fish that we like to catch and eat. And when these things got into the upper Great Lakes, I think it was in the 50s, the populations of those sport fish absolutely crashed. And so international resource agencies in multiple states and provinces in Canada implemented a system where they treat the rivers where these lampreys spawn with a chemical they call the lampricide to kill the spawning lamprey so that their numbers are lower and they don't have as much impact on the sport fish in the Great Lakes. And that program has been a tremendous success. Populations of these popular sport fish have rebounded tremendously. It's been a miracle, frankly. And the commentary we had in this week's print edition of Outdoor News said it protects an annual fishery valued at about $7 billion and an estimated 75,000 jobs. Lake Michigan in particular, there's a ton of charter boats that go out, and they take a lot of Minnesotans out to catch some of these big fish. Also, in Lake Superior, out of Duluth, there's a lot of charters. Now, Russ Mason and other writers pointing out that some of these DOGE-related cuts are potentially going to impact this program, which I guess costs like $20 million a year to treat and destroy these spawning lamprey. So if you've been listening, you know we've got a multi-billion dollar recreational fishing industry here that we've been able to preserve and restore for a $20 million annual investment. That's why some of us get a little perturbed when we talk about these wonderful cuts to federal programs that are being done with a meat cleaver instead of a scalpel. Go cut the fat, but don't potentially destroy a program or hinder a program like this that is so important to the sport fishing industry in this part of the country. There's probably a lot of people out there listening who have booked a charter on one of those Lake Michigan boats or Lake Superior boats and had the time of their life catching 10, 15, 20-pound Chinooks or Cohos. That's at stake here. And honestly, good fishing aside, controlling these foul, blood-sucking sea lampreys is a responsibility we have. Society unleashed these things into the greatest freshwater bodies of water in the world, and we have a responsibility to keep trying to fix it. With that, folks, you're lucky I'm out of time. I will stop ranting. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Rob Dreisline, and this has been WCCO Outdoors.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.